This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. The moment has finally arrived. After years of talks, debate, and planning, and despite ongoing pushback, people started signing up for the Affordable Care Act's health insurance marketplace this week. On today's show, we want to look ahead towards January, when all residents will be required to have health insurance, and find out if area hospitals are ready for the changes. My guests today are Michael Richards, he's the Executive Director of External Affairs at Gunderson Health System, and Joan Miller, she's Executive Director of External Affairs and Government Relations for Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. Thank you so much for joining me today. At the top of the hour, we heard President Obama talk about how there's going to be snags and bumps in this initial rollout. And I know both health systems have been working pretty hard to make sure that things are running as smoothly as possible in these first initial weeks. So I want to just ask, how are things going in these first couple days that the marketplaces have actually opened? Michael?
Well, there have been glitches. There have been quite a few glitches. It's been a little bit difficult for people to get online and access the marketplace at this point in time. But everything we've tried to do is to put in place a foundation so that people are ready once those glitches are resolved. And so there's going to be a little awkward period of time until those glitches are removed.
And then is there anything that Mayo or Gunderson themselves can do to get past these glitches, or is it just sort of waiting for the website to free up a little bit? Joan?
I think it's a little bit of both. But before we go too much further, I just wanted to let you know, Maureen, that Mike and I and the county and people from throughout the 8-county area have been working collaboratively on this. And so we still are proceeding with all the planning that we need to get done in order to make it work. But I think the collective wisdom from that group is that with people hearing about the snags in getting online, that it really has dissuaded people from trying. So, you know, we've had probably about, maybe 50 or 60 hits on our website where we have information posted just as Gunderson does. And in terms of calls and walk-ins, you know, we have had just a handful of people. So we're busy right now trying to get certification for the people that will be the in-person assisters, and that's another glitch that we're all trying to work through.
And when you say 50, 60 people have gotten through, does that mean they've actually signed up through Mayo?
No. I mean, that means that they've just gone onto our website and taken a look at, you know, where we will have people to do in-person assistance.
Okay.
Right. And there are things that people can do. There's the 1-800 number they can call into. I've tried that. I've gotten through. It's a little bit difficult, I think, just to because you can't look at the plan options right in front of you. There's also an application that you can do, a paper form that people can find and print out and do that as well. So there are options. Again, the whole thing that we've been trying to tell people is this is a marathon, not a sprint. And so with the glitches, yes, they're going to be there. But once we get past that, hopefully sooner rather than later, people will be able to go online and shop around.
So maybe people should just remain patient at this point?
Yes.
I think so. You know, I think the other thing, you know, they've been reporting volumes of traffic to healthcare.gov, but I think one of the things that Mike and I know and we've heard is that, you know, there are people who are volunteering to assist, but they've actually not seen the website live. So before you sit down and help somebody, you're going to want to go out and take a look at what it looks like. So I'm fairly confident that a lot of those people are there that are not there just to sign up, but people that are going out to check to see what it looks like. So that should tamp down soon.
Yes.
And Joan, as you mentioned before, both Gunderson and Mayo, as well as the county and other community partners, have been working together to make sure that many people do get signed up. So can you talk about individually at Mayo, at Gunderson, how many people you have hired to help people sign up? How does that work? Do people just show up at each of the hospitals, and are they able to walk through the process then?
Michael?
Well, we are not hiring any extra staff. What we've had to do is, after the regulations have come out, we had to look and try to figure out how best to serve our patients that come in through our door. So we're going to have anywhere from 20 to 25 people that are going to be certified application counselors. We're waiting for CMS to give us some codes so we can take the federal test and be finalized in, through that process. What we have said throughout the in the county is we're going to have enough of our patient base who are going to come in and going to need assistance. So we don't want to necessarily say to people coming off the street, you just come on into Gunderson. They're welcome to come, but they're going to be full enough with our patient load the way it is. So I think the county understands that, and they're trying to figure out a way to put people in other areas, St. Clair Health Mission, the libraries, the county buildings, and getting out into more rural communities. So it's part of the partnership that we're trying to wade through right now and making sure we have the right people in the right places.
Joan, the same thing at Mayo?
We actually did end up hiring additional staff to do this.
So how many?
We have hired 4 new full-time folks, and so they will be stationed 5 days a week in La Crosse and on Alaska, and then they'll be working 1 or 2 days a week in Sparta and in Toma. And but I think I wanted to sort of underscore Mike's point. We are sort of estimating that it's probably going to take about an hour for an individual to apply. Mike and I are part of a group organized through the Wisconsin Hospital Association. So we're getting reports from Milwaukee and all over the state. And that's the number folks are using, is about an hour to get people signed up. So we are asking that people call and make appointments as opposed to just showing up. Because if there are a couple of people there in front of you, you could be waiting, you know, hours before you would get an opportunity to meet with someone. And then we are monitoring, as I know Mike is too, monitoring. We've got an email that people can call. We've got an email they can check out. And so we're monitoring the volumes there. And if the volumes outstrip our ability to help them, then there are other people that have been certified who aren't doing this full time, but there are other people who have been certified, and then we would use them to help. And then I think the other thing is that we actually have talked about, you know, there are people that do this as contract people, and that might be another option for us as well.
And we really try to start with a little bit of education too. So people who are coming in through our doors, if they're on Badger Care today that may be losing coverage, our front desk is handing them a sheet of paper saying, check your mail because there's some information for you. And those people who are coming in that don't have insurance today, they're getting a sheet of paper as well that says, you know, there's new changes to federal law that's going to require you to have insurance. So just trying to be as proactive. And we know that not everybody is going to go out there the first week, but we want to continue to make sure that people are aware of the resources that are available. And both of our organizations are in a very unique situation because we have multi-states and we're right on the border here. And we have 3 pretty different Medicaid programs and 3 different exchange programs as well. So it poses some issues because a lot of people will come from Iowa and Minnesota into our hospital in La Crosse and really try to navigate that for them and make sure that they have resources available for them. That's a big thing for us.
The other thing, Mike got us all together back in, was it May or April? And I think one of our founding principles was that we are dealing, there's a large part of this population that is very vulnerable. And this is a complicated law. And so our goal has been to give out information that looks very similar, whether they go to Gunderson, whether they come to us, whether they show up at Scenic Bluffs, the Salvation Army is working with them, not giving them conflicting messages. And I think that we're doing a really fine job of that here in western Wisconsin. We do hear reports from other parts of the state where their approaches have not been as coordinated, and there is misinformation being given to people. So I think that's something that this community should be proud of, is that we really are working collaboratively on this.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. My guests today are Joan Miller. She's the Executive Director of External Affairs and Government Relations for Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse, and Michael Richards. He's the Executive Director of External Affairs at Gunderson Health System. Today, we're talking about effects of the Affordable Care Act locally. There's been a lot of preparation to work with the vulnerable population, maybe people who are transitioning off of Badger Care, people who have never purchased health insurance in the past. Do you anticipate that these populations will be coming and needing extra assistance? And how many are you anticipating? Or do you think that many people will be able to just sign up for health care on their own?
Well, this is that's a very good question. Yes. And if you had the answer to it, I'd love to hear it. We don't know how many people are going to come through our door. We don't know how many people are going to go out and shop for insurance. We do know roughly how many people are going to lose their Badger Care coverage in our region. But we don't really know how many people are uninsured or underinsured. And so that poses a problem for us in trying to identify those people. We think that early on there's going to be a lot of confusion, because going out and shopping for health insurance can be a daunting task, especially if you've never had it before, you've never paid a copayment or a premium or understand what a deductible is. So it's going to be kind of that first year that we have to understand and put in place a foundation and build on for the future.
Mm-hmm. You know, I just, everyone has estimates. And so I think one of the estimates we've been using in our organization is when you look at the counties in Wisconsin that we are serving, the estimates are there are about 25,000 people who may be uninsured and may be eligible. And then I think the numbers coming off of Medicaid are around 4,500. That's a large number of people. And as Mike said, I think that if you are insurance literate and you've done this many times and you understand premiums and deductibles and copays and you can read a plan and you know what the 60-40 split is, you should be able to go online and apply and get it done in 15 minutes. But we're thinking that the vast majority of people don't fit that description. And, you know, if your situation is complicated, so maybe mom has one type of insurance and kids have another, it gets really, really complicated. So if you're a young single person who's technology savvy and knows insurance, 15 minutes and you're in and out, but we don't think that's going to be the case for most people.
If someone decides that they're going to walk through the doors of either one of your medical facilities, let's say they go into Gunderson, would they be able to sign up for insurance through Mayo at Gunderson and vice versa? Or if they go to Gunderson, if they go to Mayo, do they have to sign up for those respective health plans?
A certified application counselor, even though they may be an employee of Gunderson Health System or Mayo, they have to disclose that both of us have a conflict because we're selling insurance, so we have to tell them that right away. But we can't dissuade them away from doing that. That right. If they want to do that, they can sign up for whatever plan they feel fits them the best. So, no, we cannot steer them one way or another.
And the regional group has spent a significant amount of time, because the certified application counselors can help you enroll. They can explain the plans to you. They can explain deductibles and copays, but if someone were to turn to them and say, I don't know what to do, what plan should I pick? They can't do that. But the philosophy is that if they are there, we want a very smooth handoff. So what might be the phone numbers of independent insurance agents? What are their hours? Could you get them on the phone and have them talk this person through that? So that's a lot of the planning that's been going on. And I think Mike and I both just got yesterday the list of insurance brokers that would be available to do this. You know, the challenge is it's going to change a lot over the next right. 6 months, so keeping traffic. But those very smooth handoffs, I think, is what we know will be important, because if someone shows up and they want to do it, you want it done before they leave.
Have many people signed up through the marketplace, through either one of your plans yet in these first couple days?
I think the biggest challenge has been access to getting online. So we know of, I think Scenic Bluffs has been working on this. They reported yesterday they were able to get into the system and sign one or two people up.
Okay.
So we've got two people on the board, with thousands more to go. But it's progress, and I think it's we'll hopefully see more people, more stuff picking up as we move forward.
Is this the same at Mayo, Joan?
It is. You know, we are very fortunate because Scenic Bluffs is located very close to our hospital out there. And so they actually do have some federal dollars to provide navigators. And so they have actually come over to the hospital and helped us out over there. So that's been wonderful.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Today, we're talking about the local effects of the Affordable Care Act. My guests are Joan Miller. She's the Executive Director of External Affairs and Government Relations for Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse, and Michael Richards. He's the Executive Director of External Affairs at Gunderson Health System. I want to look ahead to January 1st, when there will be many more people. Hopefully, the glitches will be worked out. Many more people will actually be insured. So do you anticipate that more people will actually be going to your respective hospitals and receiving health care?
Well, I think in general right now, I mean, we're seeing these people already. It just depends on what door they're coming through. So those that are on Badger Care, we obviously want to make sure those who are losing Badger Care continue to get insurance. And those people who had not qualified for Badger Care that were on the wait list, we hope that they get the Badger Care as, or the new Medicaid as well. At this point in time, I mean, we kind of know that there's going to be a need. We just don't know to what level. We feel comfortable that we can handle that level. But there's going to be probably in November, December, when we start understanding how many people are going to be out there, what that need's going to be, and where that need's going to be.
Mm-hmm. And the other wonderful thing is that we have, both systems have had some experience with this because under Governor Doyle, when we launched Badger Care, it opened up insurance for many of these people. So we have experience of what it was like when people who had not had insurance in a long time got insurance. And so I think we're going to be looking back at how that went and trying to correct the things that we wish with hindsight we would have done differently. I think that, you know, one of the things that Mike and I, both organizations, are strong proponents of is some kind of coordination of care. So people are getting the right care and they're getting it in the appropriate location. So I think that's going to be one of the challenges that's going to be facing us is, you know, how are we going to do that?
And although the numbers are sort of unknown at this point, do you anticipate that with more people seeking care potentially on a more regular basis, do you think that you'd have to hire more doctors, nurses, or staff to accompany this?
It all depends on, I guess, where the location is going to be. I mean, we feel pretty comfortable with our ability to handle more people coming into our system. But again, it's kind of that uncertain number. I mean, if we're talking 25,000 people coming in, that's one thing. If we're talking about 5,000 coming in, that's another thing. So it's and you know, we don't know what the population is that's going to buy the insurance. We know that typically the people who admit on the high risk insurance pool that are going to lose their coverage are going to be on there, but they've been getting care already. The whole healthcare marketplace is predicated on the notion that more people are going, they need more people who are 27 and healthy. Mm-hmm. So even though there are people out there that may access care, they may not need care right away. It might be just more of an insurance policy in case anything were to happen to them. So, but we really want to make sure that the those with many chronic illnesses, that, like Joan said, that we can coordinate that care, because if they don't have insurance, they're going to wait longer and longer to get care until it's too late, and then they come into the emergency room and they have more complicated issues.
Mm-hmm. It just seems that maybe if people, you know, especially younger people, if more younger people are going to be buying insurance, that maybe there would be a greater need for preventative care and seeing you know, an internal medicine doctor or something. But it's just one example.
You know, we are – we are living, we, healthcare, is living in two worlds. We are living in a world, so the Affordable Care Act is really, at the core, it's reforming insurance. And it does allow people who have had pre-existing conditions to no longer be excluded from health care, and it offers subsidies so that you can you get help paying your premiums. But it's basically insurance reform. I think one of the things that all healthcare organizations are looking at is in the other world we live in, which is that they pay you for how many things you do as opposed to paying you for making someone well. We're all working in that world of trying to figure out how can we take waste out of the system. And so while we're taking waste out of the system that's already in place, we're also working in this new world with the Affordable Care Act, which is going to be bringing more people into the system. So I'm very hopeful that as we proceed on our mission of looking for waste and extraneous things that we do to respond to the cost concerns that everyone has about health care, that they may in the end come together. That's what I'm hoping for.
And I do want to get into costs in a minute, but Joan, has Mayo talked about the possibility of hiring more staff?
I think we would say the same thing that Mike has, is that you know, we are required by federal law to see anyone who shows up in our emergency room. And so if we could redirect those people to another setting for care, because they'd have insurance now and they could go and see somebody in a clinic setting, there may be a lot of shifting that is going on.
Right, and we're continuing going, and even before health care reform, we've always been trying to refine our system so that the timing from coming in the door and seeing a physician and going through that process is, we're trying to reduce that time, trying to be more lean and improve our processes. So, you know, as we're going to continue to do that throughout this, and I think that'll allow us to be able to tweak our system.
So people who have had health insurance for years, who have been going to Gunderson, have been going to Mayo for years, Franciscan Skimp in the past, but will they see any changes? Will they experience any changes once they go to the hospital after January 1st when the Affordable Care Act is in place?
No, they're going to be going about the same way that we've always done things. That's not going to change. I mean, people are still going to be able to come into Gunderson. They're going to get high quality care, and we're going to take care of them as best as we possibly can and try to meet their needs.
You know, I have a good graph that the Kaiser Family Foundation put out, and it's last year, but I think it's still pretty accurate, that, you know, we have to remember that about 50% of the people in the United States still have employer-based health care. And there is another, 13-14% that has Medicare. And so those things, we're talking about, you know, that uninsured group is about maybe 16%. So it's a very important part of the system. And I think that those of us who are in healthcare believe that it is important that everyone have insurance and access to healthcare. That's what we're all doing this for. And but it's a smaller part of the population that we're talking about.
Joan Miller is the Executive Director of External Affairs and Government Relations for Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. Michael Richards is the Executive Director of External Affairs at Gunderson Health System. Today, we're talking about how local healthcare providers are preparing and handling changes that come with the Affordable Care Act. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Coming up next, our discussion on the healthcare law continues. We'll be talking about how the Affordable Care Act will affect costs. Archives of this and other recent editions of Newsmakers, photos, and links to information on the Affordable Care Act can be found on our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. You can also like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCullum. The overall goal of the Affordable Care Act is to get more people covered by health insurance. For the people that enrolled in the healthcare marketplace this week and in the coming months, they'll be covered as of January 1st. But how are these changes affecting local healthcare providers? Here to talk about this today are Michael Richards, he's the Executive Director of External Affairs at Gunderson Health System, and Joan Miller, she's Executive Director of External Affairs and Government Relations for Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. Now I want to talk about cost, the costs associated with the Affordable Care Act. Rates vary kind of depending on your age and I think just age and maybe smoking too, but it's difficult at this point to access the rates since, as we talked about before, healthcare.gov has been experiencing a bit of traffic. But Michael, can you just maybe give us some sort of rundown as far as rates go at Gunderson for the healthcare plan?
Well, the rates are, like you said, are going to change based on your age and smoking status. And I think when we went about, and the health plan could probably give you a little bit more information on this, but they, you know, we wanted to be as competitive as we possibly can be. We're selling our product in Wisconsin and in Iowa. We do have the multiple plans in the platinum, gold, silver, bronze category. So, in looking at the plans, I think, you know, I don't want to give any kind of information out there because it all really depends not just on your age, but also on your household income and your family size. So, I mean, a plan that may be listed on a silver plan at $330 a month may actually be less than that based on the subsidy, depending on the household income size, household size, and the income level for an individual, because there are subsidies baked that will be put into there for people.
And backing up, can you describe the differences between these bronze, silver, and gold plans?
Sure. So the there's a platinum plan, there's a gold plan, a silver plan, and a bronze plan. And in order of precious metals, you have the platinum plan is going to be more of your Cadillac plan. It's going to cover about 90% of the actuarial cost of it. So basically, the insurance will cover 90%. You'll cover 10% of that cost. But it's going to be a more upfront cost to the individual because it'll cover more in terms of the cost. The gold will be 80% of the overall cost, so an 80-20 split. Silver plan will be 70-30, and the bronze is seen as more as the catastrophic plan, which is more 60-40. And the silver plan is really where we think a lot of people will go into because and I don't want to get too much into the weeds on this, but in terms of the silver plan, that is where the incentive or the subsidy is going to be based upon. So if you go into the silver plan, the second lowest silver plan is what the subsidy is based on. So if you go on the silver plan, you'll get the full subsidy. But if you go up to the platinum plan, you'll have to cover the cost difference between what the silver plan and the platinum plan would be. So there's multiple different kind of options available to people out there. But we think a lot of people will go into the silver plan because that's obviously a good plan, but it also has more of the subsidy and you don't have to spend more on the difference.
Joan?
And I think that is one of the things that people can be thinking about now. So a young person, 27, 28 years old, who just wants insurance if something really terrible happens to them, that bronze plan is going to look very attractive to them. But if you would be a person who's had cancer and you know that you don't want a high deductible, then looking at that platinum. So I think that's the thinking that people can be doing is thinking about what their health care utilization has been like by the last few years and what they expect it to be. And that'll help you when you get out on the exchanges. Now, our health plan is Health Tradition, and I want to be real upfront that I'm not an insurance person. I'm not an actuarialist, although I am learning how to pronounce that word. But I think our approach to pricing out on the exchanges has been conservative. I think there are a lot of unknowns out there in terms of how the utilization is going to go. And so I think our approach has been conservative. Our approach also includes not only access to local providers, but it would include access to providers at Mayo Clinic in Rochester. And so that's a little bit of a difference between, I think, my understanding of the in our market. You will find the Gunderson plan out there, our plan out there, and I think Marshfield has their...
In certain areas, in our service territory, mm-hmm. La Crosse County, for example, is going to be our Gunderson One plan. That's our first time that we're selling an individual plan, and we're pretty excited about that. But as you get outside of this area, you're going to see, Marshfield's going to be out in more of the Jackson County area. And then as you get down towards Madison for us, you're going to see maybe like Dean and other groups out there as well. But for the most part here, it's Health Tradition, and it's going to be our Gunderson One plan that'll be out there. And, I don't know, I don't want to speak for what Mayo's doing, but at Gunderson, our health plan has staffed up and used existing staff, got them certified to be agents, so that if you have questions and you want to buy a Gunderson plan, you can call right out to our Gunderson Health Plan as well. And so that's another thing that they're doing. And we kind of, I'm working on the system side, and I have my peer Greg Skemp over at the health plan is working from the health plan side. And so it's been a kind of a coordinated effort in making sure that there's resources for people out there as much as we possibly can have.
And we've done the same thing too. So again, Mike and I tag team when they're talking about the provider side of it, and Greg and Steve Kunis are sort of the tag team when they're talking about the insurance plan piece of it. So, but there are a number of changes in how an insurance person would price a plan. I think it would be easiest to say that, we've talked a lot about if you have a pre-existing condition, they can no longer charge you more money for that. They also cannot give you discounts for wellness. So there is going to be shifting on both ends. And so an older person like myself, if I were on the exchange, I might be benefiting because a young person like Mike would be helping to pay more of my healthcare costs. So it is, they say that...
You're welcome.
They say that women use more healthcare than men, and that older people use more healthcare than younger people. And you hear 5-1, 4-1, but the law now says that you cannot have any more of a differential than 3-1. So that sort of is driving that younger person paying more and the older person paying less. So
in terms of how the tax credit will work, it depends on your household size and your income level. But so if you're making up to 133% of the federal poverty line, so let's say you are a single individual making $15,282, you're going to pay no more than 2% of your income. Mm-hmm. So that kind of gives you an idea of what that is. Now, the subsidy will go all the way up to 400% of your federal poverty line. So let's look at a family of four. That's what we have in my family. $94,200 is the max that you can make to get a subsidy. So that's a good income in this area. And that's we see a lot of people that are going to get a subsidy. You will pay no more than 9.5% of your income. So in between there, you could have a single adult making $11,490 to a family of eight making $158,520. That will qualify for a subsidy. So there's a wide range, and it's gonna be more or less out of what your out of pocket cost is gonna be as a percentage of your premiums. Now you may have a deductible, but that's why it's difficult to give you kind of a listing of what the cost is gonna be, because there's a few variables that have to be put in place there.
And I think too, when we talk about cost. One of the things that is that the Affordable Care Act has done is it has specified what are the 10 essential health benefits that must be covered by everyone's plan. And so that makes, they talk about how it's easier to compare from one plan to the other. But that also has some, we think that it's a very robust plan. I mean, what they are offering in terms of the 10 essential benefits is a very robust health plan. When our health plan people take a look at it, there are services that would not be traditionally offered by a lot of businesses. So,
for example?
Well, they are expanding the formulary as one of their benefits. They actually, we talk a lot about preventative and wellness, and to a lot of people that means just going in and getting your mammograms or your prostate screenings, but they also include chronic disease services. Right now, many plans cover mental health, but one of the essential benefits is also substance abuse. And so those are the kinds of changes that you are going to see. And I think, so Mike and I both also work on community benefit reporting, and I think we know that mental health and substance abuse are huge issues in this community. And so having that be part of the essential mandated essential health benefits is going to be a plus.
With having Gunderson and Mayo both providing insurance in this area, does that make the price competitive at all? I mean, will people in the area see lower prices because both of you are here?
Well, we didn't know what each other were going to charge. We didn't know what population was going to come. So before we could kind of understand a population because we knew who they were going to be, but we don't know who's going to show up. So it's kind of one of those educated guesses that have to be made on how the price is going to work out. And I think after the first year, after this works itself out, we'll be able to see kind of what that's going to look like in the second year. Because some of these people will want to re-enroll, will know kind of what the history has been, what their utilization levels have been. So the first year, again, kind of like the website, you know, it's a little bit of a unknown, a little bumpy, but we hope that there's going to be, we knew that they were going to be in the market. So I think that competition has helped a lot. So,
you know, the other thing too, Maureen, that I think is important for people to understand is we are very fortunate to be in Wisconsin because we have many small provider-owned health plans in the state of Wisconsin. That's unheard of in most other parts of the country. So, for example, in Iowa, you might find that there's one large insurer that has 80% of the market share. And so there is that concentration of there is that market share leader that does have a strong influence on price. Whereas here, you have a lot of small regional provider-owned plans, but you have a lot of other insurance plans that are doing business in the state of Wisconsin. And I think, Mike, Wisconsin is one of the few states in the country with that scenario. Is that
yeah,
right?
I think we've been a leader in that, and we want to make sure that we protect that kind of competition because it's not only better for the patient, but it's just good competition. I think it's better access.
But it's interesting because when you look at rates in Iowa and Minnesota, maybe it's because in Minnesota they have a state-run marketplace. In Iowa, there's the federal and state partnership. In Wisconsin, it's the federal. But Wisconsin's rates on average are higher than Minnesota and Iowa. So how does that work out?
Well, I think, you know, some of the reports that have been out there early on about what the rates are going to be for a person, whether they live in Kenosha, La Crosse, Madison, a little bit unfair for this marketplace because, as Joan talked about, the 10 essential benefits, those are 10 benefits that some plans have never had before. And so it's not an apples-to-apples comparison for an individual product. And then to throw on top of that, if you look at the La Crosse market, we've never had a plan for an individual plan before. Mm-hmm. So we're on the market with Health Tradition, and so it's hard to say that that's an adequate comparison. So. Mm-hmm.
So how do you establish rates? Is there an easy way to explain that to people?
Well, I think that's another show with our health plan folks. I think that you're going to have those are the folks that understand the insurance industry and pricing and utilization levels that can probably give you a better idea on how that works.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio and La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guests today are Michael Richards. He's the Executive Director of External Affairs at Gunderson Health System. And Joan Miller. She's the Executive Director of External Affairs and Government Relations for Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. We're talking about the effects of the Affordable Care Act locally. Another cost question I have is, you know, they say if more people sign up for health insurance, more people get into the marketplace, eventually this is going to drive down the cost of insurance. Where exactly do those savings come from? You know, I mean, when you're looking months, maybe years down the line, is it doctors taking pay cuts? Is it tests costing less? Where exactly do those savings come from?
I mean, that's a really, really good question, Maureen. And I think the answer is people don't know. I think the assumption is that if you invest money up front on prevention, which, you know, not only are preventative services one of the essential benefits, but you also can't charge a copay for that. And so, you know, for some folks, you know, if you a mammogram is covered, but you have to pay, you know, $20 for it, that would be a barrier to them having that test. So the assumption is that if wellness is covered and people take advantage of this, that we're going to catch things on the front end and we aren't going to be dealing with it on the back end. And I think, and there are other changes they are making elsewhere in the system to help fund this, but I think the payback on it is going to be much more long-term than short-term. Would you agree, Mike?
I would, and I think one of the ideas of to making it more affordable is the subsidy that's put in place, but the subsidy has to be paid for somewhere. So out of the premiums that people buy off the marketplace, a portion of that goes back towards a pool for the subsidy. And so that's what we've been talking about is as we look at our population, we know that those who had been on, for example, the Hearst plan are going to get insurance, they're going to have more utilization. So to offset some of that, you're going to need the young invincibles, as we call them, the 20-year-olds through that don't have insurance or don't have it through their parents, all the way up to, you know, the mid-30s that, you know, maybe roll the dice on any given year and don't have insurance. These people we need to have into the pool in order to make this work. If they don't come into the pool, you're not going to be able to create an environment where that insurance is going to be affordable or sustainable, because you're going to have high cost at the end of the day and not enough money to fulfill that subsidy requirement.
And with the Affordable Care Act, part of it is to prevent people from just going to the emergency room, which is very costly if an accident occurs. So I mean, I'm sure there are going to be people who don't sign up for insurance. They're going to take that penalty. So what happens if someone shows up in the emergency room at 2 in the morning after a car accident? How will that affect things in long term?
It's been going on for a long time. Yeah. I mean, it's
just, not going to change.
It's not going to change how that happens. And so again, we want to get these younger folks in as much as possible. And, you know, our goal, too, is to get as many people insured and to get as much access as possible, because, you know, obviously it helps us if they're insured, but it also helps them because then they have that protection both financially and health-wise in the event that anything happens to them. So our goal has been we want to get those people who are newly eligible for Medicaid, we want to get all of them on. Mm-hmm. Those people who are on BadgerCare, as many of them on. And there's still going to be the people who hadn't qualified for Medicaid before, who don't qualify for the new Medicaid, that are going to sit this out because that's what they've always done. Mm-hmm. And we have to do a better job in our community of educating them on why it's important.
And how will you reach those populations who no longer qualify for Medicaid or BadgerCare? Does it come down to community education, or is Mayo and Gunderson, are you reaching out to the people who are losing their coverage?
Well, we've done some communication already from Gunderson. We have our big magazine that goes out to people. We have our Prevention Connection that goes out to a certain a population demographic. Those people that come in their front desk are getting the sheet saying they might not have BadgerCare next year. Those that are uninsured are going to get a similar piece. What we've been doing with our regional enrollment network, we're trying to reach out to those people as well through different channels. We're trying to get out there in the media as much as possible. So thank you for this opportunity. And also, it's going to be just word of mouth, getting volunteers and mobilizers. You know, there's a lot of nonprofits in the communities and in the region that touch the lives of these people every single day. And getting them the information and the tools to help them understand the need and their options is going to be important.
Mm-hmm. And so, and there is such a dedicated group of people throughout the region. I mean, we've had people from food pantries, Salvation Army, I mean, it's just amazing the people that show up and want to volunteer and help. And one of the biggest ways that people can help is by just getting the word out. I think early in our planning, we decided that we would prefer to catch people as far upstream as you possibly can. So you don't want to be having this conversation with somebody when they come to the emergency room. You want to be having it with them when they walk into our clinic. So again, as Mike said, you know, how do we get the word out to our patients as they are coming in to our clinics? And I think that, especially in this Western area, the Department of Health Services, who sort of has oversight of that Medicaid Badger Care population, is doing a really fine job on trying to let people know you're likely to be off, you are going to be off. They're following up with phone calls to people. So I think we're doing the best we can. One of my reflections is that Mike and I have done a couple of talks like this, and they're not an awful lot of invincibles sitting in the room to find out how this is going to work. And so how do we get the word out to younger people? I talked with a young woman the other day, and I was really encouraged. She's 25, and she's on her mom and dad's policy until she's 26. But she wanted to go out and take a look so that when she was off her mom and dad's policy, she would be able to buy insurance herself. And I thought, way to go. Could you recruit 2,000 other people just like you? So,
do you think it really will make much of a difference if not as many people sign up that you would hope would sign up in the long run?
Well, I think it depends on what population signs up. But if we see more people who had typically been on Badger Care that don't sign up, we may see more people coming in the wrong door, and the wrong door being the emergency room. You know that we could have seen them in the clinic setting. If those people who had not been on Medicaid and not been on insurance before, it'll probably be status quo, similar stuff that we've already seen. So I think that, again, we want to see as many people insured as possible, and whether they go on the marketplace or not, it's going to only be beneficial to them.
You know, one of the things I learned this morning was that when Badger Care was launched for our childless adult population, there was a stipulation that you needed to get in and have a physical, so that you established a working relationship with the physician. And if you didn't do that, then you were no longer eligible. I think people in the healthcare field really believe that it is really important to have a relationship with a provider and not just come in through the emergency room for your care. There isn't anything like that in the Affordable Care Act. So I think that's something that we're going to be watching. I know one of the goals of a medical home pilot that we are working on with our Medicaid population in La Crosse and with a private employer in Sparta, one of our measures of success is, can we get them established with a primary care provider? Because we know that that provides better care coordination and better utilization of services. So, you know, as Mike said, those are the things that we're all going to be waiting, watching, looking, and seeing how this works out. It is a grand experiment.
We have about a minute left, but do you have any final thoughts or advice that you want to share with folks?
Well, one thing I do want to say, because I think there's a lot of people out there that may have questions, but if you are listening today and you're on Medicare, don't worry about this. We're not talking to you. We're talking to people up till 64 years old. So if you're on Medicare, you don't have to have the insurance mandate doesn't affect you, and you don't have to go on the marketplace. But we also want to reach out to not only the Medicaid population, but also the veteran population, those people through the VA that it may not cover your entire family. So just be aware of that. And those people who have children today that are on Badger Care, your children will likely be covered, but the parents and caregivers, you need to go out and check this out, because it's important for you to have care as well. But that's that. And if you have questions, I think there's a lot of websites you can go to. You can go to gundersonhealth.org/marketplace for some information. And also the county, La Crosse County, is going to have some information as well.
And what I would like to say to people is that there are people who are willing and eager to help you do this. And so please reach out and look for that help. Again, you can go to the county website. You could go to mayoclinichealthsystem.org and click on any of our locations, and you'll get there too.
Joan Miller is the Executive Director of External Affairs and Government Relations for Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. And Michael Richards is the Executive Director of External Affairs at Gunderson Health System. Today, we talked about how local healthcare providers are preparing and handling changes that come with the Affordable Care Act. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Stroob, and our senior producer, John Davis. To hear archives of this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. You'll also find photos and a link to healthcare.gov. And if you'd like to comment on our program or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse. You can also find Newsmakers on Facebook, updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more. Like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.